Thank you for the very kind introduction, and thank you for inviting me to present the main findings of a study focused on antipsychotics and the risk of type 2 diabetes in children and youth. Can everybody hear me? I wanted to do this actually at the beginning rather than at the end. This project was made possible by a team of investigators from Vanderbilt University, Columbia University, and the U.S. Food and Drug Administration. And Drs. Wayne Ray and William Cooper, in particular, I think warrant special acknowledgement and my personal vote of thanks as my mentors on this project. In terms of disclosures, this project was supported by grants from the AHRQ, an award from the FDA, and the NIMH. One of our co-authors was also supported by an industry grant to his university at the time we were conducting the research. The data that I'm about to present have been published in JAMA Psychiatry, and I have included the reference here on the slide for those of you who are interested. So now we get into it. By way of quick background, several antipsychotic drugs, and in particular the atypical antipsychotics, have been linked with substantial risk of treatment-emergent dysmetabolic effects in adults, and this includes increased risk of type 2 diabetes. The use of antipsychotic drugs, particularly atypical antipsychotics, has been increasing over the last several years in children and youth, thus raising similar concerns about antipsychotics and the risk of type 2 diabetes in that vulnerable population. And this question, we felt, was particularly pressing for children and youth who were taking antipsychotics for indications where treatment options other than antipsychotics could also be reasonably chosen. Thus, our objective was to compare the adjusted incidence of type 2 diabetes in children and youth in Tennessee Medicaid who recently initiated antipsychotics or control medications. So ours was a retrospective cohort study of Tennessee Medicaid enrollees aged 6 to 24 years. The data source was the Tennessee Medicaid Research Database, which is composed of linked computerized Medicaid files with data on enrollment, prescriptions filled at pharmacies, hospital admissions, outpatient visits, and long-term care residents. These files were augmented via linkage with computerized death certificates, and beginning in 1998, a statewide database of hospital discharges and emergency room visits. So this slide is basically a schematic sort of overview of the study design. We'll start right up there with the top box with the blue text. The study population consisted of children and youth who were 6 to 24 years of age and enrolled in Medicaid for at least 1 year between January 1, 1996 and December 31, 2007. Persons eligible for cohort inclusion had full prescription drug coverage and enough enrollment in healthcare utilization to ensure adequate data for the study variables. And they also had no evidence of diabetes, pregnancy, or polycystic ovarian syndrome prior to the first day of cohort inclusion. Now, the reason that we included persons with prior evidence of diabetes is because we were interested, of course, in ascertaining new onset diabetes rather than prevalent diabetes as our main endpoint of interest. The reason for exclusion based on pregnancy was to avoid misclassifying gestational diabetes as non-gestational diabetes. And then the reason for excluding polycystic ovarian syndrome cases was because our endpoint definition of new onset type 2 diabetes depended in part on anti-diabetic prescription fills. And so some of these medicines, metformin in particular, are also used to treat polycystic ovarian syndrome. So we excluded those cases to avoid misclassification, or at least reduce our propensity for it. Now, we also excluded children and youth with diagnoses for which antipsychotics were the only reasonable form of pharmacotherapy, such as schizophrenia. Those folks were not included. And we also excluded persons with diagnoses for which antipsychotics, at least in our cohort, were clearly predominant. And an example of that was autism spectrum disorders. So this left us with a cohort that could be prescribed antipsychotics or alternative medications. Now, the two boxes there in the middle with the red borders, those are our exposure groups. And those exposure groups were classified using prescription data. So the antipsychotic users in the red text there had no evidence of antipsychotic use in the year prior to filling their first qualifying antipsychotic prescription, although we did allow up to 90 days of antipsychotic use prior to the first qualifying prescription, so long as there was a year prior to that of no antipsychotic use. The control group there in turquoise letters consisted of children and youth who were prescribed alternative medications. And these alternative medication users were matched with the antipsychotic users on the basis of age, sex, and propensity score within centiles. The study endpoint, new onset type 2 diabetes, there in, yes, that's green, was identified using medical claims. The case definition for new onset type 2 diabetes was validated using a chart review sample. In the validation study, 84% of cases identified by our computer algorithm as having type 2 diabetes were confirmed as true cases using medical record review as a gold standard. These are, again, our main comparison groups, but just in a little bit more detail. So again, the main exposure group were users of antipsychotic drugs, both typical antipsychotics and atypical antipsychotics. The control or alternative medication group consisted of users of mood stabilizers, antidepressants, so long as there was evidence of a psychiatric diagnosis, psychostimulants, alpha agonists, so long as there was evidence of an ADHD diagnosis specifically, and benzodiazepines, so long as there was evidence of a psychiatric diagnosis. The relative risk of type 2 diabetes was estimated using hazard ratios calculated from Cox regression models that were adjusted for age, calendar year, and propensity score. But we were also interested in effects within specific subgroups and the effects of cumulative exposure. In other words, was there sort of a cumulative dose effect? The cohort consisted of nearly 30,000 antipsychotic users and 15,000 control medication users, or one matched control for every two antipsychotic users. And as you scan down the slide, I think you can appreciate that the groups were pretty well balanced on several factors. In this case, demographic characteristics that included mean age and the proportion of cohort members who were male, Caucasian, urban dwelling, or disabled. Our exposure groups were also well balanced on selected psychiatric factors, and these included diagnosed bipolar disorders, major depression, other unipolar depressive syndromes, ADHD, conduct disorder, diagnosed alcohol use disorder, and so on. Our exposure groups were well balanced on selected factors that could potentially be associated with higher risk of metabolic disorders down the pike, and this included baseline or at least within the year before their first qualifying day of follow-up, glucose testing, diabetes screening, hyperlipidemia screening, diagnosed obesity, hypertension, and cardiovascular disease. So collectively, the cohort members contributed nearly 56,000 person years of follow-up. We observed nearly 20 cases of type 2 diabetes and nearly 4 cases of type 1 diabetes per 10,000 person years of follow-up. As expected, antipsychotic use was not significantly associated with an increase in the risk of type 1 diabetes, and so type 1 diabetes will not be further discussed. This graph shows the cumulative incidence of new-onset type 2 diabetes among antipsychotic users in red and control medication users in green. Antipsychotic use was associated with a threefold increase in the risk of new-onset type 2 diabetes as compared with control medication use. The significantly higher risk of type 2 diabetes with antipsychotic use was apparent within the first year of follow-up. This graph shows hazard ratios for the risk of type 2 diabetes with increasing cumulative doses of antipsychotics, and those are the red squares, relative to control medication users, which is the green square. And you can see increases in the hazard ratio going from left to right with increasing cumulative antipsychotic exposure. This apparent cumulative dose relationship was statistically significant. Now, in our cohort, at least among the antipsychotic users, 87% of them were users of atypical antipsychotics, so clearly the majority as we anticipated. The same pattern of observations was seen after restricting the main exposure group to only atypical antipsychotic users rather than just use of any type of antipsychotic drug. And once again, the risk of type 2 diabetes increased with increasing cumulative atypical antipsychotic exposure, and this dose relationship was statistically significant. Recall that our cohort inclusion criteria allowed cohort membership up to the age of 24 years. This graph shows the incidence of type 2 diabetes as a function of exposure group, again with antipsychotic users in red and control medication users in green, after restricting the cohort to children aged 6 to 17 years, in other words, pediatric patients. And you can see that the risk of type 2 diabetes remained significantly increased with antipsychotic use relative to control medication use. The risk of type 2 diabetes also remains significantly elevated with antipsychotic use relative to alternative medication use within these strata defined by sex, diagnosed bipolar spectrum disorders, and use of psychostimulants. So then, concerning limitations. First, generalizability. Our findings apply to children and youth in Tennessee Medicaid, the population under study, although we'll also say other research groups have published similar findings now in other pediatric populations. Second, differential surveillance. So people who are prescribed riskier drugs would be expected to have more metabolic screening after the drugs are initiated. We matched exposure groups on variables that were ascertained mostly during the year before follow-up, but not on variables ascertained during follow-up. Third, concerning misclassification, although we validated our endpoint definition, our exposure and endpoint definitions were still based on data that were not collected specifically for research purposes and are thus still subject to some residual misclassification. Fourth, we were unable to get at some important potential confounding factors, such as baseline body mass index, because that data was simply not available to us, or at least weren't complete enough for valid use. Fifth, our risk estimates were for antipsychotic drugs overall and then atypical antipsychotics in a subgroup analysis. We were not powered to look at individual effects of each unique antipsychotic drug, though you can bet that the risk probably differs by agent. And finally, this study considered only one piece of the risk-benefit equation. Other potential risks and potential benefits of study drugs were not investigated as part of this study. I thank everyone for their attention.